Hello, and welcome to episode 103. Yes, 103 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mask from Mars. And as always, I'm joined by the comic artist, writer, and creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hot off the train, literally.
Which, that sounds a bit dirty when you say it like that, Dan. we've also got our very own hobo with a shotgun, Mr. Tony Esmond.
Hello, Obsidian.
It's already started. And this week, we're joined by two guests. We're pushing the boundaries on this one. We'll tell you why in a minute, but let's first introduce them. First up, it's our pleasure to welcome back the creator of Afterlife Inc. and one of the brains behind Big Punch Studios, a man who's always on the go. It's Mr. John Locke.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome.
Love to hear your voice.
Such a gentleman already.
Well, I tried.
See what it's like after 2 hours.
He said, smoking an exotic cheroot.
And our second guest, as you can hear, they're giggling away, is the creator behind the comic The Heart of Time and the new caffeine-based fantasy series, NPCT. It's Sarah Milman.
Hello.
Hello, Milmo.
Thanks for having me.
Good old Milmo. Lock and Milmo.
I'm glad you got the caffeine thing in. I think I am a bit caffeine buzzing at the moment.
Oh, tell me about it. I just necked my 8th coffee of the day, which may have been a mistake because halfway through my kidneys are either going to explode or I'm going to wet myself. So, you know, it'll be fine.
Excellent. Set the tone.
So, Dan, Tony, I think we might have our hands full with these two tonight.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And as you see, folks, this show is packed to the rafters with small press comics talent. And you know another place that is? Onlycomichouse.com.
Hey. Oh, God.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I'm going to turn the sponsor links into beautiful segments.
Oh, my God. And you want people to buy this?
Yeah, our sponsor, Comic House, it was basically set up as a marketplace and database site where creators can buy and sell their comic books. That was before they decided to help us out and, you know, probably the stock of their names dropping.
Yeah, they're fucked now, aren't they?
Yes, publishers and indie creators can list their stuff for free. And on the website, you'll see all kinds of amazing indie titles and also a few bigger names to boot. I know, I've seen a few on there myself. I believe there's some IDW, some Judge Dredd on there as well. Yeah, so if all that's your bag, they've got it as well. Well worth checking out if you want to help support those indie creators. You might not be able to see at conventions. And we're talking a lot about conventions this week. And if you can't make it to conventions, online is where you go, isn't it, really? All that, and they're also publishing a badass anthology series that not only has featured a strip by John Late and our very own Dan Butcher, which was marvellous. That's not another intro, Dan.
He's just come off the train.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Everyone's frazzled this evening. This is going to be an amazing show already. I know it. Yeah, but the anthology is currently a home to my latest project alongside Hellbound Media, Mandy the Monster Hunter. So, you did know that.
Interesting.
Yeah, there you go. people are going to be sick of me after.
Colour me intrigued. Yeah.
Oh, I'll colour you anyway you want.
Right, he's turning to Leslie Phillips.
It's already started. That's what you get from a midweek recording. Yes, Comic House, they're great guys trying to push the boundaries of what self-published and small press books can achieve in the modern marketplace, which is something that needs to be done, I think. So go and show them some love at comichouse.com. There you go. That was fairly smooth.
I think so.
Bravo.
I'm trying to get good at these things. But enough of all that. Down to business. Are we all ready to ramble?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm always ready to ramble.
Oh, my word.
You might regret it. Sorry.
I think all our listeners are looking forward to this one. It's going to be good. Two of our... we can say it because they're on the show, can't we? But they're two of our most popular guests.
Yeah.
Oh, really? You've got the analytics, have you?
Oh, they fell for it. Yeah, they fell for it, lads. See? Now, a couple of weeks ago, the small press social media was all abuzz with opinions bouncing around all over the place. Everyone seemed to be posting up detailed blog posts talking about the latest hot topic for all us self-publishers. That topic was the experiences and opinions on the UK's largest multimedia and comic convention, MCM. Now, the reason I go, it's because some would argue that to call those shows a comic convention would be wrong. But there's always a comics presence there in some form.
Yeah.
And it's usually in the much-touted Comics Village. Mm-hmm. Yes. Both of our lovely guests today themselves posted up hugely insightful and, more importantly, very well-thought-out articles about what they thought after that weekend. I know certainly John's became viral, and was being...
Yeah, nearly two retweets. It was incredible.
I saw it you being retweeted and posted everywhere, personally. Kept seeing John Locke's name come up. It was like one of my dreams. soon after, it seemed the floodgates opened. After these two people here, they were the first people I know to sort of mention about it and talk about it. After them, it seemed the floodgates opened and everyone and their mum had an opinion on it. Yeah. and what the future was for the small press at shows like this. Now, on this show, we're going to be discussing a bit about that. And just who knows where the conversation is going to go. Everyone's got opinions, and that's why we're all here. As I'm someone who has neither been to one of these shows as a visitor or an exhibitor, I'm looking forward to hearing what everyone has to say and also sitting back and just letting them go for it. I'm just going to take it easy this week.
Before we go, I was going to say, Tony, you've been to like some of the bigger ones in the States. Yeah. How does MCM compare in kind of atmosphere and what goes on there?
Well, in scale, it's probably the biggest, isn't it, I think, in the UK?
I think so. Certainly in the UK. And yeah. I've heard anecdotal suggestion that it is the third largest show in the English-speaking world.
Wow.
Really?
I know it's...
After
it's
San Diego, New York, and then MCM. I've been told that. I don't know if it's true.
I don't know if that is true. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 160,000, I think, the footfall is. I'm pretty sure.
I wonder how big C2E2 is. We can have a look while we're talking, can't we, actually? But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. With those numbers, it wouldn't surprise me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Toronto Fan Expo was pretty massive a few years ago, wasn't it? You know that one?
Yeah, I remember going there back in 2008, and it did seem tremendously big. Yeah.
Has anyone ever been to the Crouch End Comic Art Festival? I think that had five people at it last year.
turning them away at the door.
Yeah, I was two of them. I think it's worth explaining what the MCM is, because I mean, I know we have listeners from further afield than the UK, so yeah. it's essentially a pop media sort of festival, isn't it, with lots of actors, video game areas. It is probably the big cosplayer one, is it, at the moment?
Yeah,
I'm going to say
so.
Yeah,
And I know that when it started, they did a number of comic publishers had tables, and they would there was the odd guest there. I think I met Greg Rucker at one. But they've sort of pulled back from paying for invited comic guests mostly. I think the last one was Dave Gibbons a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And now it is the Comics Village does have professional comic artists there, doesn't it? I think normally you get like
depending on your definition of, I guess, professional, I suppose. There's certainly
people who work for one of the big sort of five companies as well.
Yeah, I'd say anyone who is there under their own scheme.
Okay.
They're as an individual who happens to have worked for Marvel or DC.
And then the rest is small press, and it's quite difficult to get into. Tables are much sought after.
Yeah.
But in my experience, I haven't been for over a year now, but certainly on the run-up to that one, Comics Village was the where you went at the convention to have a little bit of a breather, get a bit of space. Mm. Is it still like that?
Kind
of,
yeah. I would say so.
Yeah, I guess. Sorry, Sarah, I didn't mean to talk over you there.
No, I was just going to go, kind of, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to start anything with you.
Well, in the UK, it's set out in the Docklands, isn't it? In the XL, which is sort of in the East End, a big sort of hotel stroke conference centre area. You get there by the Docklands Light Railway, and if you go there, at most throughout the days of the weekend, it's full of cosplayers getting off at that stop. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the mood for it. Outside is a big sort of cosplay area, and they have a sort of sound stage outside and sort of dance-off-y type stuff. And I think now they've railinged off the outside, haven't they? So you can only get into the railinged area with a ticket.
Yeah, no, and they've certainly tried to legitimise what was a kind of informal late night rave That was often just going on with, or you know, I'd say predominantly young preteen to mid-teen cosplayers. You know, too young to drink legally, certainly, just kind of partying the night away.
Yeah.
I mean, can I take this opportunity maybe just to make a couple of points?
Sure.
I mean, the reason I just want to say at this point, this is stuff that is in the blog post I wrote, so there'll be an element of me echoing myself. But I felt, for the purpose of writing that blog post, I wanted to make some clarifications and kind of like how MCM is certainly, I think, a good example of maybe some bigger problems affecting, I guess, many conventions in the UK. MCM is like, we could probably talk for 4 hours alone purely on how weird MCM is, just like the weird little vagaries of how it's run. But and I think it's certainly a good kind of like touchstone or scapegoat for some of the bigger problems. And I'd be happy to, I was wondering if we could like talk a bit about MCM and then maybe, I guess, talk about conventions in general as well.
It's a parallel to other conventions, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's certain parallels to be made there with everything, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, no, and if only because, like, I know I've certainly been kind of using the term comic village as a more kind of, because I mean, I think it's not like MCM owns a trademark or anything on it, but that was the term they specifically used to refer to the artist's alley, or kind of just the area in which independent creators got discounted tables.
Yeah.
I think it's a good term, for lack of a better one, for actually describing the entire community and culture of indie creators at all shows across the UK around the year.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
I think so. We have a village mentality, okay. Burn the witch and all that. No.
It is quite difficult. I think it is quite difficult to say like comic village though, because it just covers so many different people and there's so many kind of different opinions throughout. Like if you say Comic Village is the entire indie community, it's really, the lines are just so blurred. It's really difficult when you're trying to talk about promoting indie comics, because it's like, well, when do you stop being an indie? When do you start being professional? And like, it tends to, I think the main thing, I don't want to go over what I said, the main thing is too much, that is, but the main thing I was trying to get across was it's, I think we're being too internalized and saying who is us and who isn't us. And it's more a case of trying to promote everybody, regardless, you know? But,
true.
I think
the kind of caveat I would add to that, and I think we almost do need to make some distinction between the people who are producing stuff off their own back and the people who are working for larger publishers. And of course, it's not to say that one is worse or, you know, kind of better or anything like that at all. It's just, you know, whenever you get an article about how to make comics or you get an article about the reality of UK comics, the comic village, as I think of it, the kind of indie creators, is not included in that, because there are very successful creators, very well-known creators, writing from a perspective of, you know, the way you make a comic is you have a script, you impress a publisher, and then you go from there. And then, you know, the end goal is Marvel, DC, or Image. And, you know, and yet when we talk about British comics, we're also in the same sense talking mostly like 2000 AD, like the larger things. And I think for me personally, I'd like to see us claim more of an identity as a community to then better promote ourselves, I feel.
Yeah. What can I ask what you two think the distinction is then? Because I mean, I certainly see different groups of comic creators. For example, by the time this goes live, I will have been to LCAF, and I've been to LCAF the last 3 years, and it's on some years you can't actually get in. It's so busy.
Mm. Yeah.
And that is, I'm not going to call it a different style, but it's certainly a different community from Comic Village. Mm. So why is one rammed to the rafters and people are selling out left, right, and center, and one not? Do you know why?
The perception of what LCAF is to MCM or comic villages in general.
Maybe. Yeah.
This is where I feel we kind of fall between the cracks, because, Dan, I wonder what your experiences are here, because you are making an indie superhero comic off your own back. You know, you're playing into, the kind of a genre which, you know, I grew up loving. But it's like, you know, if someone's coming to MCM and they're, you know, what are they after? Are they looking for, say, Spider-Man, something they recognize? Or are they looking for a brand new superhero?
Exactly.
Whereas
it's a difficult punt.
Whereas, like, we know something like LCAF, there is a definite defined market for, for lack of a better phrase, let's say artistic comics. And that's a horrible descriptor, but you know what I mean, literary.
I know that it's completely in the perception, I think, John, and not in the reality. For example, I think Hilda, for example, by Nobrow, would go down a storm at MCM.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think those books would fly off the shelves. But I think there is that, it's the perception we give it, because one is cool and one is not as cool.
Mm-hmm.
I genuinely think.
Yeah. It's like, look at Pantheon. I think, Hamish, who writes Pantheon? I think he was MCM this year, and he did incredibly well, as far as I know. I had loads of people come up to me and say, oh, where's the guy who does Pantheon? So that's not...
I think we need to cross-pollinate a little bit. I mean, I think both your comics would do well at LCAV.
I didn't get into LCAV.
Did you? Yeah,
I applied. Yeah. So I think, again, it's a weird one, especially with the stuff I'm doing now, is that I had some feedback from a con I submitted to where they said, it's weird because you look a bit, you're not professional, but then you don't quite look indie enough either. So it's kind of, it's really annoying. Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not.
A few more beards. Get some more beards on your work.
Maybe they're looking for that kind of corporate look, do you know what I mean, like the kind of the flash website and very streamlined and not a face, if you know what I mean. So it's more kind of
perception is very odd, because I think something we've noticed with Big Punch is people seem to think we're a bigger presence because
labeled and stuff, aren't you?
Maybe it's the kind of books we produce. I don't know, like it's odd, but you know, people often seem amazed at the notion that, you know, it's just four people, kind of. And, you know, we all have day jobs and we're doing this off our own backs.
But that's what happens when you present something professionally, when you put a lot of effort and it comes across, you know. And that's not just the books, but that's in the presentation of your table and, like, the way you are and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if I walked up to your table, John, I would think you were an ongoing you are an ongoing company, but more of a, like, you wouldn't, I wouldn't presume
business.
I wouldn't presume you all had jobs elsewhere, because there's four of you, you're all standing up, you've got like a double length table and numerous banners behind you, and it's that sort of professional look to it, maybe.
Well, thank you. I mean, I certainly wasn't fishing for compliments.
You've got a lovely hair.
Well, you got
them. The hair is remarkable, actually. Yeah, but it's a tough one, because I think one thing that, and please, someone, kick me in an audio fashion if I'm talking too much, but I think one really crystallizing point from MCM was that how different people's experiences were. Mm. And I've given up trying to see if there's any rhyme or reason to it. It often seems like black magic, but I guess in the interest of full disclosure, Big Punch had a very good show at MCM, which I guess makes me writing a slightly kind of, I guess, slightly controversial post afterwards, makes it seem a bit odd. But it's like, it strikes me as odd when, you know, we had a good show. We, you know, speaking to people a few rows away who had a good show, you know, people five rows back had an utterly terrible time. Mm. And you're thinking, you know, what's going on here? Like, sorry, Sarah.
Oh, sorry, no, I didn't mean to interrupt, but, like, see, as well, I wrote that post on Twitter at about 6 a.m. because I couldn't sleep after getting back from MCM, and the big thing for me was just, in full disclosure as well, I had quite a good show, but I had a good show for an indie, and I think that's what was frustrating me a little bit, because I don't know about you, but I kind of feel like I'm almost hitting a bit of a wall, in that I used to work for the Disney store, and we'd always go on about like conversion rates and that kind of thing. And when I was thinking about how many people were actually going to the show, then how many people were going through Comic Village, and then of those people, how many people were buying comics, that whole dichotomy was a bit depressing, really.
But I think that's what was keeping
me awake, really. Like, sorry.
Sorry, mate. I think there's more of an equation to it than just that. I think the majority of people who go to MCMs do not go to MCMs to buy comics.
No.
I think you have to take advantage of people coming into Artist Alley who didn't go there to buy a comic. They went there to get an autograph or buy a rucksack or something. And you have to have that work that is eye-catching to those people. The people who go to, for example, go to LCAF go to buy comics.
But indeed. I mean, we've Yeah, I mean, we've noticed an interesting trend among, you know, I'd say there's a certain demographic of people coming to MCM who, of course, aren't comic readers, but are very drawn to...
Yeah, they're open to offers, aren't they?
Yeah, no, indeed. But I think it's also, it's interesting, I'd say perhaps maybe the younger audience members are quite drawn to just things which are colourful and bright, which seems like a gross oversimplification.
Like magpies.
Yeah, well, so they like what they like, and I guess we can't also, you know, we can't blame, you know, customers for simply buying what interests them.
Not at all. I think the big thing, of the big things someone was saying was that, you know, we can't help the fact that we are a niche industry, but I think it's just becoming a bit of a self-perpetuating thing. Like, we're constantly being treated as a niche industry, and this isn't the fault of like the punters, this isn't the fault of like the con organizers, it's just in general, really. Like, we're acting niche, we're being treated like we're niche, and then nothing's happening. Like, people are coming to MCM to buy the dreaded F-word Funko Pops. They're buying Funko Pops and then they're leaving, when really it should be more they're coming for Funko Pops, then discovering all this other stuff, then buying their Funko Pops.
Yeah,
because I mean, you know what I mean?
Because there are an incredible amount of factors going on here. And I think one thing which, you know, I think a lot of people have observed, and I think after I posted the article, a lot of people contacted me privately to say that they'd experienced the same thing, which was a general kind of reduction in sales. A steady, slow but steady decline over the last 2 to 3 years. And, it got some quite heartfelt kind of personal anecdotes from people saying, like, yeah, we've noticed this too. And I think, you know, there are a lot of shows now, and, you know, pop culture, as it were, is kind of having a real high point at the moment. And, it's like part of that is people want, you know, the Funko Pop and stuff. And I think, you know, while we can't blame customers, of course, I think we do have to consider the notion that there are changing tastes, and the average convention goer's interests and desires may be changing slightly.
Yeah. Also, the fact that you're kind of going up against multi-million dollar companies with advertising and legacy characters and brands that go back longer than we've all been born. So, kind of when you're going in then, and you're when you, like, there's you with your kind of comics banner, and then there's on the other side there's like 500 square foot of sort of Batman pumping out music and graphics, etc. That's a very hard kind of thing to go up against.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that leads on to what I was about to say, actually, Dan. That's very insightful. But I was thinking, do we then, because do you think they'll get away with Comics Village, do away with it? And if they do you think you would fare better having a table on the main floor?
Well, I feel I've actually lived the whole spectrum of tables at MCM, because we've been in the Comic Village, we've had a dealer table, and we've also had a booth at Big Punch Studios. So we've kind of experienced everything. And when we had a dealer table, and we were out, you know, kind of in the deep ocean between two tables, I think run by the same company selling Pokemon plushies, we deliberately skewed what we sold. We thought to ourselves, well, look, you know, we're going to be out of our depth there. People will only discover us by chance. So we actually led with our card game, you know, because we just happened to have a thing which isn't a comic, and we had our books with us, and we did sell some, but we just focused on, you know, the card game, on Sandwich Masters, and it did really well. Again, it's just we just tried to test the water, because in the two times we've had a booth, the one time we were slightly out from a Comic Village, and the problem we faced was that there were people coming over to us almost looking baffled to see something they didn't recognize, and not in a good kind of baffled. They were like, "What do you do?" And we're like, "Oh, we make comics, you know, with our hands. You know, we have ideas and stuff."
You made this?
And it's all
you make this.
I know.
Yes.
Honestly, at the extreme end of the spectrum, and this is very rare, but there's almost an element of disgust among people. Like, this has happened on a handful of occasions where people learn that you have physically made something and it's not a brand they recognize. And it's like a shock and a revulsion, and they almost drop the book and walk away. That's a strange reaction.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
I can understand a bit of kind of brand loyalty to some people, kind of Marvel, DC, and not willing to kind of buy into something new at the ground floor. Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon.
But it's interesting, like, because I think the Comic Village, while, you know, and I mean the physical location on the MCM floor, while not perfect, is the best of quite a rough deal, which I think we have. And I mean, because let's be honest, like, MCM as a corporation is not making any money off the Comic Village. They are giving us heavily subsidized tables. Yeah. And it's this odd dichotomy where obviously we're incredibly grateful for that. It allows, you know, people like us to do London shows and just about make it affordable. You know, because it's hard. Like, I don't think if any of us really wanted to make money, I'm not sure we'd be in the comics business. I mean, I this is the thing which is, you know, and the thing that's making me frustrated lately is not, say, just the Comic Village and the problems faced by an indie exhibitor. It's simply that the industry as a whole has fundamental problems. Mm. And I feel what's come to a head with the Comic Village is I would like to see us better defend ourselves and better use what little we have more effectively. Because, I mean, if Marvel and DC can't make money off monthly floppies...
Oh, God.
You know, it's like...
We're in trouble, aren't we? Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah. What could we do? And it's like, you know, Marvel and DC are shoring everything up with their movies. You know,
But then, look, we are... I mean, as much as some people hate it, we are part of Europe. Mm. And the second biggest comic sales marketplace is France.
Mm.
You know, you got Japan, France, and then America. Mm. So, but France manage it. You know, there's something strange there. Do you know what I mean? That we can't do it.
You know? There's also you also have the culture thing, though, because certainly...
Yeah, but we had that 20, 30 years ago as well, Vince. Yeah. We've just lost it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I think, you know, it's like you know, what do we mean when we talk about the UK comics industry or the British comics?
That's three industry. Companies, isn't there? You know?
Well,
that's
you know. I think push, it'd be, you know, if you could grab the average person off the street at a push, they might suggest 2000 AD. You know?
Yeah.
That's just the only one.
If you were lucky, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Vino, sorry.
Vino.
Yeah.
But, it's interesting as well that going on in the background behind MCM that weekend was that article by Hannah Berry when she was talking about the fact that she basically made about $8,000 a year making comics, and you kind of, it's difficult being an indie and wondering how to scale up, like how do you make this into something you can live off of, because I think that was a really big frustration. It's just the fact of, you know, a lot of people have come up to me since and been like, well, there's so much you personally can do. Like, so many people need to work on their artwork. And, you know, but there is a case of when you've done all that, what do you do when you're still not earning proper money? Everyone's just getting pushed out.
The people that I see make a very good go of having, like, doing web comics or having their comic is not so much the comic as in they're selling themselves.
Yes.
As personalities.
I cannot second that enough, because I feel you know, and Dan, maybe you can comment on this, but like, I feel because the UK comics indie group, geez Louise, what's that? I can hear like a rotary helicopter airplane in the background. Yeah.
Someone needs a Tums.
Okay, well, look at it this way. Like, I consider, you know, Skydout as a comic book creator, as in generated content with the sole purpose of it going into print. Like, the first thing I widely released was a physical book.
Yeah.
I feel, and I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, very educational, from maybe about 10 years ago, of American webcomic artists. And I feel like we've missed a trick. And I feel you could almost see the beginnings of it 10 years ago. But now, like with Patreon, I don't think we can safely rely upon the comic industry to support us. We cannot rely upon the idea that eventually we will be promoted out of these, you know, living for yourself to eventually go to the hallowed land of Image or Marvel or DC. Yeah. I think we, you know, we're an industry built on a degree of desperation. Like, we're always waiting to be kind of plucked from obscurity.
I think because of that, though, there's a danger of things like Patreon, for instance. More and more people are doing it, and it's great if you can sort of get money from it, but it's a quick fix in a sense. And I think that Patreon, the bottom falls out of it sometimes, because you get the initial spike and it's fantastic, but then that won't always be there, you know.
Oh, no, entirely. No.
See, I'm not sure about Patreon. I think it's a very different beast to something like Kickstarter. Because I'm finding with Patreon, it's more something that you build slowly.
Yeah.
Well,
like, it's not really, I've found in my experience at least, like you post it up and it's not like you get hundreds of people suddenly back you and then they drift off.
No, it's more a case of, sorry. But utterly, no, I think this is exactly it, though. Like, it, much like Kickstarter, it's not a magic wand, and we should certainly never treat it that way. But I think, like, the end goal, like, if any of us have as creators have an end goal, I'm going to be very presumptuous here and assume it is to, you know, be known for what we do, to be respected for what we do, and to make a living.
I just want to be happy, John. I just want to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird.
I've never been under the illusions of kind of doing comics professionally. I didn't see that as kind of an avenue, and especially it was very much cemented after being on doing the podcast for like 2,000 episodes. I was like, there's so many fantastic people doing this, but like they're not making the living at it, and it's I wouldn't give it up because I love doing comics.
Well, no, I don't think I could change at this point. I feel it's been like a mission from since I was a young boy. Like, this is just my calling in life, and so rather than say end up bitter because maybe, you know, I never reach, like, you know, hypothetically, like, what if this is as good as it gets? Like, what if we never progress beyond the comic village, and what if we just continue making the comics we're making? Then it's like, what I want is, like, how do we make it better then? It's like, how do we protect ourselves? And I certainly, making the leap to Patreon overnight is not gonna fix everything, but I think we have to. I think, Dan, you mentioned, like, you know, building a community around yourself, you know, selling a personality, because...
Yeah, it's a shame, though, we've got to that, isn't it? I see that all the time.
I've actually made a decision not to do that.
Right.
Really? I don't want to live my life.
I don't want to sell myself for it.
Yeah.
Well, at the same time, we don't need, like, the daily vlog from me talking about, you know, drinking my coffee and, here I am.
Because they mostly end up in, like, kind of like, oh, this really thing really bad happened to me today and I'm feeling really bad about myself. And then so I say, oh, don't worry, I'll be fine. And then I wonder, is this being done to kind of generate sympathy, which maybe it's been massively cynical of me, which is very unlike me. But is it they're just kind of doing that to kind of generate sympathy and money?
And also, I think we live in a world of the internet personality, you know, the multimedia personality, but also at the same time, those two things aren't a career, because you're not going to be doing that in 50 years.
Do you know how do you monetize it and keep it monetized? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's like, okay, so and I agree with you, because I find the YouTube homepage utterly terrifying. I've never seen such a swarm of yawning faces, and I that drives me mad, I'll be honest with you. But I think there is a balance to be struck here, and it's not, you know, 101 screaming blog posts. I think it is just talking to your fans and explaining to them, not in as brutally simple terms as grabbing them by the lapel and saying, do you not understand how the finance works? But saying something to the effect of, look, you know, hey, I love it when you stop by my table. I see you once a year, you know, you're kind enough to pick up a book. We need to kind of transform the fan you see once a year who picks up a new book from you, assuming you can keep up to the pace of producing at least one book a year, into a fan who engages with you all year round.
Yeah.
Somehow. You know, and
you know what, though? Like, I find... the thing is, though, I find it's better if you... It's like when someone comes up to your table, though. If you're constantly hard-selling and talking about yourself, it's so difficult. I think it helps everybody if you talk more generally, not just about, like, how you feel or, like, you know, politics or anything like that, because God knows that's a bit rocky at the moment. But, you know, by talking about other people in the industry and talking about the industry in general and, like, promoting other people, it helps you and it helps everyone else.
We've all sold books because we've had a great conversation with someone and then they've had such a nice time that they've just picked up your book.
Well, no, exactly. And that, you know, that is what I love about comic conventions. Like, that's why I keep coming back. And I think there's no better... You know, if you must sell yourself, there's no better sell than simply being nice and, you know, engaging. And it's like, we've, you know, it's not something we have written in our company policy. It's just something we've all arrived at quite comfortably. But as that big punch, we've never felt comfortable with a hard sell. It's always made us deeply, deeply uncomfortable.
So are you saying, John, that bikini you wear at conventions is just pure coincidence?
Well, I'd like to say coincidence, Tony, but it's a combination of convenience and also the sheer comfort.
Actually. And those letters I send you, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're in the post, along with the post.
Big punch booth, Dave.
I've been next to people when I was in MCM a couple of times, and they didn't really have much in the way of comic stuff, but they were doing the personality thing, and there was people coming up to them and talking to them like there's an in joke going on here between them, like the creator and the person reading whatever they were just creating, and they were doing really well, and I couldn't really get it. There's a lot of time when I see the personalities and I don't know what's been celebrated, what they're doing. I don't understand.
We talk about this a lot, Dan, don't we? So we see pictures of people, you know, who are guests at conventions, and we think, well, why on earth why are you a guest? Yeah, I don't understand.
Are you there for? I don't get it. It's
that short-lived cult of personality, isn't it? That they just wholeheartedly sort of swallow, and they just go for it, don't they? And then you'll see them for a couple of years, and then you'll never see them again. Yeah, you see that.
It is quite. I mean, it's the difference between. I think someone. I can't remember who. So I'm just going to take credit for it. But somebody distinguished between creators, curators, and content generators, which I thought was very interesting. Whereas like, a creator is obviously somebody who's making something. You know, the utter definition of the word. A content generator is somebody. I might, for example, suggest some YouTube personalities where it is. You are putting a lot of yourself out there. You know, no one could question your output, but at the same time, you're not making any physical art or product or, you know, digital or otherwise, which will stand the test of time. You're not a filmmaker. You're merely generating content of yourself. Whereas a curator is somebody who maybe collates work by other people. You know, I might say like those top 10 lists or something.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of this applies to YouTube, but I feel there are parallels. Yeah, with the indie community.
Because I always try and go to the marketing meetings at work and just picking up tips about where marketing is going. And YouTube is one of the biggest ones to kind of get recognized and generate income. If you get really well known on YouTube, obviously that's complete diametric opposite to doing comics, making videos. But I don't know.
The bottom's slowly starting to fall out of YouTube as well, in terms of they've had a massive thing about advertising recently, like they're completely messing up over that kind of thing. So, it's kind of at the moment I'm trying to start with YouTube, and it is just more kind of like promoting yourself and your work, and then, you know, as well promoting other people. I don't really see it, for me at least, as making money in itself.
Yeah.
People used to, but I think it's starting, you can see it now that the bottom starting to fall out of YouTube as well.
I also just hate the term vlogger. Oh, I just
well, anyway, there's literally only so many hours in the day as well. Like, you've got to make the bloody comic or write it or whatever.
Yeah.
As well as the social media promotion.
Well,
life generally and
I mean
everything.
All I ever, you know, I've got to say, like, my journey in comics has been one of, you know, a lot of illusions being shattered. Like, I always believed that the way you made a comic was, you know, something as simple as strolling into a Comic-Con, waving a script above your head. You know, as a writer now with no artistic skill, kind of waving it, saying, like, I have a great idea, and someone going, like, I'll illustrate it, and another person going, like, I'll publish it, and that was it. And so, and then you just... And, like, all I've ever wanted was for somebody to do it for me. And when that never happened, it's like I could either get busy feeling sorry for myself or actually just get busy trying to do it myself. And, you know, it's like you have to be a jack of all trades. You have to be... You know, your own marketer, your own production manager. It's hard.
Everyone is strange, isn't it?
I was just going to say that's so interesting because I kind of came about it the other way because I'm so used to doing everything myself. It's reaching a point now where, like, just the other day I was saying, oh, I might invite some artists to do some guest artwork for something. And I was surprised when people were contacting me. Like, it's so.
You do it in that voice.
Yeah, I did.
But ultimately, Sarah, that's still. Sorry, but ultimately, Sarah, that's still you being in control. Like, that's still you kind of bringing something out of nothing.
Because I'm putting together a pitch at the moment, and the thought of, like, I want to bring that to a publisher, and the thought of doing that just completely puts me in a cold sweat, because I'm just so used to doing everything myself as an intee. It kind of terrifies me.
Well, the irony being is that we're, you know, Nick and I and Ali and Lucy and, you know, everyone here, like, we've kind of arrived at that stage now where, you know, from that kind of childhood idea that everything was managed by the publisher and the publisher just made the magic happen, to being like, you know, look, we, you know, we have control at the moment, and it means and we care about the stuff we do. Like, we care, like, almost too much, I feel, about
does that also mean that, like, if you got publisher work, it would be harder for you to relinquish some of that control?
Oh, definitely. I think so.
Sarah, I'm talking too much.
I didn't think so. I'm interrupting. I keep piping up. But yeah, I think as well, I've become, because I've been doing this for quite a while, not massively long, but I think I'm looking more at what people can offer me that I can't do myself, being a lot more, you know,
so much
discerning. Because especially, like, I had a really enlightening conversation at Brighton over the weekend, of just, like, because I was thinking of all these publishers I could submit to, and it was like, oh god, no, don't go to them, oh, don't go to them, oh, don't do that, you know what I mean? Which is really, you know, you kind of, in your head, you put a lot of these companies on a pedestal, and then you realize, well, actually, maybe not.
Well, no, I agree so much with that, because I mean, I have a couple of anecdotes. I know a couple of people who've worked on my books have also done work for some of the larger publishers, you know, from those kind of humble beginnings of Apple. I think, you know, they're obviously, you know, playing in the big leagues. And, you know, they've talked about how, you know, I was like, oh, that's amazing. Like, you've achieved it. Like, you're living the comics dream right now. And I remember them saying, yeah, but actually, though, it wasn't great. Like, you know, I've not made a penny off it. Like, even now on residuals, you know, it was really hard work, required a lot of faith up front. You know, I have frequent collaborators who say, you know, I work for you, you know, I work for Big Punch. I don't consider Big Punch to be a big publisher at all, but they also work for, you know, X. And I'm like, wow, they're impressive. And they're like, well, actually, at least you pay me on time, you know, or at least you actually pay me. You know,
some of the base rates and some of the stories we hear behind closed doors, certainly probably over the last year, the sort of second year of the podcast, we've heard some horror stories about people not getting paid.
Definitely.
And this is by big companies, you know, and it is shocking. But I think you're right, though, once you relinquish it over to a publisher, you don't just relinquish the rights and how it's going to run. And let's face it, a lot of publishers will slate a book to come out in a year's time where you could have it out in a few weeks. You know, you're also relinquishing a chunk of the change that you're going to get out of that book as well. I was chatting to Pat about this, and obviously he's delving deeply into the sort of self-publishing with all his novels now. And he's finding it, from a financial point of view, much more, you know, much better for his pocket that these books are coming straight to him. You know, he's seeing much more of the money than he would do if it was put out by a publisher. He'd probably give him a couple of grand advance, and then it would take him years to get any money back.
I made with Sandwich Masks, our card game, we have actually made a decision to get a publisher for it, and we were lucky enough to get a publisher for it. And but at the same time, it's like, that wasn't our baby. We were quite happy to say, well, look, we've taken this as far as we can.
Yeah,
it's complete. It's you know.
It was an idea that worked and was successful, but in order for it to go to that next level, you had to move it on, didn't you, really?
Because sort of this is the indie thing. I mean, like, with the Kickstarter, and we were able to do one print run, but, you know, it's like, capital is always the thing as an indie creator. It's like, you know, getting the money together to print a book. You know, if you're an artist, then, you know, your greatest resource is time to physically draw it, you know, and then money to print it. You know, it's like, if you're a writer, you know, as petty as it sounds, it's like, money is a great asset, because it's like, I want to pay all my artists. And it's like, you know, we're just finishing up Man-Made God, and it's like, it's incredible outlay, you know, both personally and with the Kickstarter, just to get to this point. And it's just paying all the contributors.
So, rolling it back round to the Comic Village, how would you suggest we kind of shore up defences, as you said, John, or kind of protect what is there. I mean, I would honestly hate to see it go, and as you said, MCM, I couldn't tell you whether they would get rid of it or not, but they largely going to operate on money, and if it's not making the money or perception of bringing people in to spend their cash, maybe they would consider that. But
well, we have no bargaining power.
No. Yeah.
And we don't even have one single voice.
Sorry, I didn't mean to keep talking.
I was going to say, like, it's really difficult when you're on a kind of podcast, but
it was five of us as well. Yeah.
I feel like if we could all come together, there'd be a certain strength there, but I have absolutely zero idea how that could be done, facilitated, or in any way operated.
Yeah. I think the problem is you've got a shrinking marketplace for comics. I don't think there's any doubt in that. I think certainly, you know, as we see it at conventions, you know, it's happening on bookshelves and it's happening in comic shops. And I genuinely think the only way to go is to reach a bigger audience is by going more full on into the digital world.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to see MCM have a page where you could buy digital copies of the comics for sale at Comics Village. I bet they do well. They must get the traffic they must get through that website.
A lot, yeah. You know?
The thing is, I'm not 100% sure. I had like a really interesting conversation over Twitter with Sarah McIntyre. I've never spoken to her in real life. But she's a picture book artist. Was saying she does the hashtag pictures being business. And we were having a really interesting conversation about that. And a really interesting point came up of the fact you need to incentivize it. So it's less, right. I think a lot of people at the moment are kind of saying, yeah, well, we are a niche industry. We don't make money. You know, like, oh, thank you. Thank you, gods of MCM, for bestowing upon us this space, you know, and having a little, you know, putting a little thing on the altar and ringing a bell and walking away.
It's crumbs from a very rich table.
Yeah. And I think it's just trying to incentivize the fact of and making the Comics Village something special and something interesting, because otherwise, like, if we keep acting like we are a charity case, we'll forever be a charity case.
I mean, would you go with, like, on the ticket, say for example MCM came to you and said, Sarah, we'd like to put your comic as a free download for everyone who buys a 3-day ticket, for example. Would you go with that? Would you go with giving it away for free in the hopes that people would follow it up and buy other stuff to you?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether that's the answer. Like, obviously, you know, the first chapter of MPCT, like, is, you know, I'm all right with giving that away because it's like the beginning of it, really. Yeah. I don't know. And I think a lot of creators would feel the same. Like, you know, I think it's more, I think that's really just a quick fix, though.
But
I think
you see Sorry?
I was going to say, agreeing with Tony, though, I feel that's one thing, and it is a small thing, but really, that's just part of a bigger thing, which is promotion.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just one of countless things that could be done by MCM, hopefully even at quite low cost to them. But, you know, it'd be great if we could get to a point where we could just say to them, look, you know, it'd be nice if we could go to them and say, hey, look, you know, let's be honest, we are very grateful that the comic village exists. Let's not spread that. See, let's not over forget that. Sorry, Dan, you
said. So, like, Comic House doing the app, they go, we get our titles on Comic House. Comic House approach NCM as a single entity representing, I don't know, 50, 60, 100 creators, and say, for every 3-day pass, you get six months.
Here's a free code to get a free comic.
Yeah,
or download the app, you get a free comic. It could be something like that. Five comics, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, because I think if you just have one single creator putting their stuff up, I don't think that really does much. Whereas if you had more of, like, you know, a collective or just a collection, or, you know, this is what's new at MCM this quarter.
We need MCM to be shining the same level, an equal level of attention on the Comic Village as they do with any other feature. I mean, they give the YouTube, you know, the VidCon area a lot of press. They give the big movies a lot of press. It's like, for the sake of putting out, of adding, like, you know, 10 extra tweets to their week's output that are highlighting different comic creators. And I think they do a couple, But it's like the Comic Village is not a destination which they are promoting as a place for new discoveries.
The trouble is that a lot of those other things would have marketing people employed very recently pushing
budget.
That front.
And for instance, you'd need you'd need that sort of a superstar creator, a sort of book. A book comes out of nowhere. This creator just comes out and just totally blows the world away with their book. And they are, like us, like just a self-published creator. When it comes to MCM, they'll probably take the reins of it, and they wouldn't put them in the Comics Village. They'd probably put them somewhere else.
Like Max Smith, if he turned up with Scurry, that would be like, this is big news, because he's got the massive online presence, and Joe Public picking that book up would be entranced by it. It's fantastic. But
the thing is, you see the enthusiasm of these people. I mean, as a cynical 64-year-old, I go to these things, and whilst it does like incredibly annoy me, there is a huge amount of enthusiasm by your average punter going to MCM. When I say that, I don't mean a comics reader. I mean a cosplayer, And if you manage to get into their hands something like one of your two series, you two creators, I think they'd start, the word would go round. I think they, you know how nutty they are, they'd start screaming catchphrases, and you'd suddenly get a load of sales, I think.
Yeah, because
they'd read it in the queue.
The audience is there. I mean,
as
you mentioned, it's converting them from being the cosplayer who's interested in X manga to looking at some of these titles.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just say quickly, I think one thing, we've certainly found is that, we try to make the table look as appealing as possible. We try to make our books look as good as possible, and we try not to be aggressive or obnoxious or anything. And we just let people come to us. And we found that, when they come over and they might show an interest, and you might have people who've never read a comic before in their life, but we find that more often than not, they end up buying a comic. And we find like a fan you make that way is a fan for life. Like, we see those people coming back simply because we were nice people to speak to. And I feel it's like if only the spotlight was being shone on Comic Village, because there is a trickle down effect. Like, if 160,000 people are through the door, even if only 10 or 15% of those people are interested in the Comic Village, as long as they know it's there.
That's big numbers, isn't it?
They are big numbers. Yeah.
So when you walk into MCM, this is from someone who's never been. I walk into MCM and I know I want to go to Comics Village. How easy is it for me to find Comics Village once I'm there?
The thing you have to remember, Vince, is that it's a bewildering nightmare. And they offer.
So is life, John, but I've made it this far.
Things, they are forever changing the layout, and they're forever changing the door you come in by.
In the first circle, there's Funko Pops. In the second circle,
about the circles of hell?
Is that what you're talking
about? Yeah, the circles of MCM. I think personally, weirdly, I think the signage was a little bit better last time. And also, like, I think it's worth pointing out, Sam Webster was saying throughout all of this discussion, there was a lot of attacks being on MCM in particular and other conventions. And I think a lot of it is trying to be positive and working with them. Yes. So I think a lot of it could be like buying a banner or something, because they're never going to, that our Comic Village is prime real estate, really, when you look at it. We want to,
But again, it becomes a money thing. And again, I feel like kind of like the points I arrived at is that not just MCM, because MCM is merely a figurehead for this, but at all conventions around the country, generally there has been a trend where there have been reduced sales over the last few years. I mean, indie creators are finding it hard simply to make ends meet. So it's
Well, I noticed there was a line in your blog which I thought was very poetic and just said everything. Comic-Cons are becoming carnivals, and it's very hard to run a bookshop in the middle of a carnival.
Yeah.
Which is not a I hope that doesn't come across as a criticism of carnivals.
And you also said that you didn't say that. Someone else said it. That's what you said.
I think it's like we have to break it down to the basic basic tenets. And I think the first one is like, times are hard. Two, things could be improved. Three, how can we do that when you know, I'm like, let's get, if we could get our house in order, like if we could agree what we want and need, because we can't go, you know, I'm not even sure we could negotiate with a small Comic-Con at the moment, although they would certainly be a lot easier to reach, simply because nobody has the authority to speak on behalf of all these diverse creators.
Mm.
You know, if we could get a consensus, at least among a majority, about what we need, then...
But there are con organizers that listen to the show.
Mm. And
They're on the awesome comic chat board, so the smaller guys, like not the MCM guys, they're certainly listening.
Mm.
Well, I have a crazy notion, but I am aware that I'm talking a lot, so I'm more than happy to maybe leave it for a bit before, but I'd love to hear some opinions on it.
You go, man, yeah, you go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I shall, you know, take the floor, as it were. But a couple of criticisms I received after the article was simply that I didn't propose any solutions, and I think it's absolutely fair. I didn't at all. I really didn't know any. But I think, and it's always a danger because you don't want to put yourself on a pedestal and say, "Look, I have the right to talk to people," and I don't. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just some schmuck. Mm-hmm. But the issue is, you know, how about this as a positive idea? It was discussed at the weekend, the idea of, at MCM Just Gone, the idea of unionizing. And after giving that a lot of thought, and it was something I'd never even considered, I can't help but feel it's a step too far for us as a community, because I feel maybe we could get there, I don't know. But when everybody is a creator and they got into this to make stuff, not to, you know, rock the boat, even if a boat needs rocking, it's like we don't want to get to a situation where people are being press ganged into having to join something or feeling guilted because they're in it and the person next to them isn't.
Yeah, completely, John. I don't want to be fair. I talk to a lot of indie creators and there's an awful lot of them I don't want to associate with. I genuinely don't think.
I'll get my coat.
You know what I mean? This is something that has been going on since the 70s, since Neil Adams. Uh-huh. Fought for creators' rights, and it has always ended wrong, bad. You know, it's always ended in failure. Like, about every 10 years, you see it amongst full-time big company pros.
Yeah.
You know, about talking about, oh, we're not being treated properly. We're not doing treated properly. Let's have a union, and it just never ends well. And the sensible people involved in that just duck their nuts because they know it's not going to help their career.
The thing I just wanted to get off my chest then is that. If that is a bridge too far and, you know, and it's not something I'm entirely comfortable with, I was having this notion, and maybe this is too soft or maybe it's not a step far enough, but I'm thinking, could we have something to the effect of a charter? And much, you know, as once upon a time there was the comics code and everything, which of course had negative connotations, but what if we could, even if it gets to a point of having a consultation, putting a survey out, having an event where people can come, and it's not a convention, but creators get together and share their thoughts. If we had a charter, and call it the Comic Village Charter, or find a better name for it, to represent the indie creators out there, where it becomes an agreement of trust, and it's not legally binding, there is no financial demand or anything like that. We just get a series of rules, or not rules, but attitudes, and kind of like a gentleman's agreement, for lack of a better word, that we could all say, look, as a creator, I agree to X, and I honor the Comics Village Charter. And maybe there's like a little JPEG you can download to put on your website to say, I'm a proud supporter of the Comic Village, you know, and maybe there's something you can flip and, you know,
so what sort of things would you suggest as rules, though? What sort of thing is
we're not? Well, rules, again, rules
guidelines
are,
or
yeah, guidelines. Yeah. I think it sounds like really patronising, but I want to see creators like informed and kind of protecting themselves. And I think the first tenet, if there would be one, would simply be, you know, respect your work and respect, you know, you as a creator, because that seems very woolly. But you know, I think there's an attitude where you may feel, well, I'm just doing it for the love, and I'm happy to take the hits because, you know, I'm not in this to make money. And obviously, I respect that so much. But at the same time, it's like, if you're forever taking these hits, eventually you're not going to be able to do what you love unless you are able to say, no, I'm not going to go to X show because the conditions aren't right. Sorry, Sarah.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, do you think it would be more of an ideological thing then than particular things? Because I think that would be my only hesitation, is the fact that I think a lot of people within the comics village are so fragmented, we can't even decide what we want half the time. Well, no, like, I think there are so many people who would be like, oh, well, it's all about comics, it's not about prints. And you have, do you know what I mean? I think that would be quite difficult.
Well, but entirely,
ideologically...
Like... Well, that's the thing, and I was wondering, but what if there was a section for creators to sign digitally by providing their logo and by taking the logo to display on their website, and what if there was also a section for convention organizers? You know, and there's like an agreement of there's like a series of promises which we make between each other, and then it becomes a voluntary thing.
I mean, you'd certainly get a lot of just off the top of my head, like the smaller cons, like, you know, True Believers, Nottingham, etc., they jump on that. They would quite easily sort of say, oh yeah, we'll put that symbol, you know, we're proud supporters of such and such.
Yeah.
But I don't know how far it would go when you get to the bigger corporate ones.
I think it's about incentivizing it. Do you know what I mean? It's about like making bigger corporations, like bigger cons. Why would they want to sign that? I don't want to be like the voice of doom.
I agree entirely. But I think having, you know, if you had a charter, as you said yourself, Sarah, it's like people can't agree on anything. That's the thing. We are too diverse a community. And right now, we don't have a platform to even discuss these things, really. I mean, like, you know, we have podcasts like this one. And obviously, you have a community around the podcast. But then there are people who don't listen to the show.
Bastards.
You know, maybe have a... Yeah, you know, they're horrible people.
Mostly deaf people.
But what I'm wondering is, if that charter, like as kind of vague and more kind of attitude-based as it was, could be used as a rallying call to at least get people under one banner, you might be a step closer towards being able to have some people speaking on behalf. Like, if you could say, look, you know, it's not an election, it's not an enforceable position, but somebody could say, look, you know, here are five or so people who are willing to act as spokespeople for, you know, in the case of talking to MCM, because if it's a case of, we have contacts with these companies, it's a case of sitting down and saying, look, we have assembled. I mean, Emma Vicelli did something to this effect along with others back in the day when they actually spoke to MCM and said, look, you know, these are, you know, let's arrange the Comic Village. Like, the fact we even have discounted tables owes a lot to them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who's doing the kind of table organisation, setting stuff up in the Comic Village, but if you had a nominated representative who knew how to do it and knew how the best way to kind of set it up rather than someone there who perhaps didn't, that surely would work in favour of...
Yeah, do we need someone who knows comics rather than knows, you know, convention layouts? Because I mean, through social media and through attending conventions for 30 years, I know a big majority of the people involved in British comics, and I couldn't tell you the first thing about who's organising MCM.
Yeah.
The problem is, I think, is that it really takes someone who is exhibiting to do this, but none of us have the time or the inclination to become an organiser. Because I think a couple of years ago, I worked for a games advocacy group. So it was a group in Wales. They were basically charitable, and their whole organisation was just, how do we promote games in Wales? That's all they did. So it wasn't focusing on any particular games. It wasn't focusing on any particular companies. It was just, they ran a show every year that was just promoting the games industry within Wales. And I think... almost, it makes you think, we need something like that for comics, but who the hell would organise it? Like,
also,
the person who ran it was just run ragged, and he wanted to make games. So
I think there's also the nature of comics. Comics creators are, on occasion, well, quite a lot of occasions, outsiders, aren't they? That's kind of how we see ourselves, in a way. Are we joiners? Often not, I would suggest. You know,
I feel like this is a big thing, isn't it? Like, believe me, like all I want is a quiet life. in my own definition of quiet, I just like it genuinely makes me quite uncomfortable to have to kind of come out and, you know, kind of be the one kind of saying this. But I just feel like I think it's got to a point where I just I know I care about comics, and I care about kind of like the people around me, because I there's people I love, like amazing people who I would never have made a single page of printed material if I hadn't had such wonderful people offering me advice and just welcoming me in. And I'm like, it pains me to see these people, you know, not getting the best deal sometimes, and you know, the what people want to buy is their business. But at the same time, it would be nice if the conventions were sometimes a little bit more helpful.
There are conventions that are very helpful, aren't there?
Oh yeah, right.
You know that. You know, and we. I mean, if anyone listens to this show, they know the ones that we love, but some aren't. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and it's just I feel. Yeah, it just maybe saying like, you know, we're not joiners, like as true as it may be. I just feel like nothing will ever change unless we decide whether we are or not.
The thing is, I think. I disagree. I think the comics, I mean, with the fact that comics people aren't joiners, I think at the moment we're just so diverse. I think there are so many different kinds of people who are making comics at the moment. I think it's not a case so much of, I think the problem is, it's not so much that we're not joiners, it's the fact that everyone wants to join and say what they want. I think that's probably more of an issue, to be quite honest. You know, everyone, like, I can imagine now there's probably about, like, everyone listening to this is probably going to want to have an opinion on it and is going to want to pitch in. And I think that's just, it's becoming so democratic. It's almost eating itself. And just, it's difficult.
I'll throw up an example of the Spider Forest webcomic community, and they will do a Spider Forest table, and they will have comics and trades from all the creators on the site. And each site cross promotes one another, and that idea of a community working together, and there was rules like you got to have X amount of graphics on your site, they've got to be a certain size. Perhaps that's the kind of thing that could be kind of implemented, but again, fragmentation.
Even if there was a thing, sorry, Dan, but if there was a community we could all get behind, like, you know, then you could eat, much as, you know, again going back to this hypothetical charter, much as you might have these kind of, you know, agreements, these promises, you can even have advice, you can even say to yourself, you know, look, you know, don't, if you're like, say you're thinking of making a comic, I want to exhibit, I want to make comics, what does that even mean nowadays, you know? And we could say to them, look, you know, yes, dream big, you know, maybe one day we can all work for Marvel, DC, Image, whatever, and we won't have to go to conventions because that's the only way we can make money to continue doing what we love. But for the time being, you know, why not accept that that is a legitimate way to make, you know, to make comics, to make art? Like, if you're making a comic and you have a table, then I'm sorry, you're in the comic industry, whether you like it or not. And it's like, we could say to people, look, you know, there are things you can do yourself. Like, don't feel that you're powerless. You know, you could, it doesn't take much to have a semi-decent looking table. And it doesn't take much to present yourself in a professional manner, and suddenly people will think, gosh, you know, they're part of the comic industry, they're players.
Would you say then the Comic Village is only as strong as its weakest link? So when a cosplayer who doesn't really know too much about the small press and indie comics goes into the Comic Village and sees something, a product that maybe is below par, would you say, oh, they probably think, oh, that's as I suspected, and write off everyone like that?
No, I don't personally believe that, because
I was interrupting. What were you going to say?
No, I'm
it's really hard, isn't it? Sorry.
I didn't realize I had such a soapbox to climb on. But just I feel much in the same way that, you know, because we can trust the customer to choose between things they like, things they don't like, things that are of high quality, and things that aren't. Like, I don't think I don't think one product brings another down or raises another. I think bad attitudes, and I think kind of being obnoxious could affect people's attitudes of an aisle.
I think the people that I remember that actively have brought down my sales have been people, like, at one point I was next to a collective that was drunk, and that was great. That pulled down my sales.
You know, we're really sorry about that.
No, you're fine, like, when you're drunk, that's okay. Like, you know, it's when people are, like, holding bottles of beer over my work that I get a little bit antsy. But, yeah, I think when you start saying, oh, this person isn't quite professional enough, or in terms of what their output is, I think it becomes a bit dangerous.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, like, I think if you are a con organiser and it is going to be curated, then that's your prerogative. But I think as other creators, I think it's a bit, like, I don't know.
There's no right to say that. Yeah, I was just kind of putting that point out. That
I think it's a valid point, Dan. I think, but it's more, in my mind, it's more applicable to walking in Comics Village and seeing Photoshop prints. That's what's more likely to put them off, I think.
I feel like, interesting things, though. Like, I can think of, like, these cool ideas, like, I'd like to implement. And I think, like, you know, say, like, we did have Comic Village had more of a organization to it, and there were people on our side, you know, not representatives from MCM, but people from our side who could do things for the community. But for example, taking a leaf out of a book of, say, Penny Arcade, you know, massive web comic, but really kind of more into the gaming community. But they implemented Pinny Arcade, based on the pin badge system at Disney. And this is an idea I had a couple of years ago, and I would have loved to have implemented it. And maybe there is still scope for it, but I really wanted to do Pindy Comics. And the gimmick was that you had a series every year. So you only maybe admitted 20 or so, just to keep kind of costs reasonable. But, you know, you would select 20 indie comics a year, and you each produce a pin badge. And the idea is that you would produce these pin badges as part of a series, and we would have a website, and it becomes the collector community, and it becomes a reason to move around the Comic Village and meet people. And I know that's a very, very niche idea, but it's also quite a cool idea, and it would be a good way.
It's also buying into the whole collector, you know, the comic collector thing, aren't they? Because there is that sort of hive mind of people just want to collect things.
I did have an idea with, if we set up a template for a kind of a collectible card that was essentially, it was a template, and you drop your character in, and the stats are there, or like, you write a little bio on the back.
Yeah, Nick did something a few years back. There was a Top Trumps game.
Yeah, but if you kind of release that to every creator, like the template, like you stick your template in this, you go and buy it from Pronto Print or wherever that card places, and get 100 done. And then whenever someone, you sell a comic, you give them a card, and then essentially all the creators have got them and give one away or similar.
Well, maybe, you do a print with loads of characters on it.
Yeah.
Sell that, make loads of fucking money. And then they go around buying all those people's comics.
Well, you know, good idea. Things like this. Sorry, Sarah, do you have something to add there?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I almost think that you should, if you have the energy, I almost think that with ideas like that, you should just really do them. Do you know what I mean? Because I think waiting for, like, a consensus and waiting for, like, a group of people to all go, yes, that's a good idea, let's approve it, I almost think, like, it's a case of just going, let's do this, what do you think? And then, like,
well, maybe so.
Almost, I mean, bring it,
with that, you could literally make the template, make the template, make your own, and then say, look, let's do this, and here's the template, and you go.
Right. It's got to sort of pay it forward in a way, whatever the idea is. I mean, bringing it back, I mean, Tony jokingly brought up the print that we're doing. But, and yes, we're doing this print that's full of indie characters of all kinds, shapes and sizes. And it's all going to be on one print that you'll be able to pick up from us at London Super Comic Con and August Bank Holiday weekend. but at the same time...
How much is it going
to
be, Vince?
Well, we haven't figured out the price yet. Yeah, it'd be very,
very,
very
reasonable. I'm sure.
Oh, very reasonable indeed. But as, when you get the print, we're going to do something where there's basically, you know, because it is one of those Sergeant Pepper's sort of pieces, isn't it?
Yes.
Lots of different characters. But there's going to be a sheet that goes with it, with, so everyone who gets that print will know who those characters are, know who those creators are. So if they like a character on there, they can find out more about them. You know, there'll be the website, or maybe they'll be at the convention and they can see them there.
That's great. That's the kind of thing.
It's literally about, this looks cool, see how awesome, like, small press comics can be. Now go forth and multiply.
Entirely. I just feel like all these ideas, like, they just, you know, some, you know, maybe they do sound like good ideas, or maybe they just sound like a drop in the ocean. But it's like, but why can't we have these things? Why can't we do this cool stuff? Like, there's nothing really stopping us other than, as Sarah's rightly said, maybe like a lack of organization. And I feel, you know, maybe I have these ideas, but then I have a reluctance to be the one to do it, because
John, you want to make comics, though. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's the problem. It's just like all of us just want to make comics and write stories, and then you think it would be really great if we could do this, but it's just, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's a lot of energy to do that kind of thing, and it's a lot of stuff to ask one person to do, and the amount of drama, you know, you have to deal with to organise things like that. It's almost like, because when I was talking about that games group, like, that person who was organising it wasn't making games, he wasn't doing stuff, he was a games creator, but he wasn't doing it then, because it's just, that was his full-time, practically his full-time job, organising things like that. I know that's depressing, and I don't mean to be negative,
but at the same time, it's like, I almost see it as a challenge. I almost see it as like, let's make it happen in a weird way,
but without wishing to blow our own drum.
I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, but without wishing to blow our own trumpet, isn't that what we're doing here? All of us, you know, trying to bring the community together.
Yeah.
What it's about.
Yeah,
you know, and I think people have bought comics because they've heard them reviewed like this.
That,
you know,
is true. Yeah,
pollinating and talking about each other's comics and being enthusiastic about the medium is something we need to do more. There's so many people who just focus on their own comic and don't say, "Oh yeah, but what, have you seen Milmo's, or have you seen Big Punches, or have you seen, you know, Vince's or Dan's?" And you need to have that conversation with people.
Well, entirely. We need champions, and at the same time, you know, I think as creators, I mean, I think we need to accept that there's an element of, you know, being business people around the same time, you know, and we need to think, how can we not just preach to the converted? Like, who can we learn from? How can we look outside comics and think?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
let's engage with these people.
Yeah,
I think the Phoenix comic is taking a very much needed step in that direction of kind of trying to get comics back into the hands of kids.
Yeah,
because that it feels like that link has just been absolutely severed over the years. And
they're not doing it in a way that's sort of like, it's not paint by numbers comics, is it? You know, there's intelligent stuff going on. It's not kind of dumbing down, which is why when we were all kids and we read these comics and stuff, you know, we were reading stuff that, you know, probably our parents wouldn't approve of, or you know, was seen to be a little
2000
more
AD, for example.
Exactly, yeah. Completely. Yeah. But because of that, you know, we are the people we are today. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's ominous.
Yeah. But I think in some ways, you know, the bottom will fall out of certain markets, and we need, you've got to think about the next generation. That makes me sound really old, but you know, we have to create more comic fans. Otherwise,
yeah, we do. Yeah, because we all know that at some point, you know, all the big movies, the superhero movies, what's that? We've been going well over 10 years now, haven't they?
Yeah,
I think that's amazing. Really. I think we're getting to that point.
Yeah, I think we are.
I almost feel like these massive superhero movies are almost intercepting the comics audiences, and they're kind of saying, "Oh no, don't read these comics. Have a look at this instead. It's massive. Great, enjoy this." Do you know what I mean? Like, how many times have you ever been to see a film that's based on a comic, not even a superhero one, that is at any time mentioned, you know, on the advertising, in the shop?
Even in the smallest way. With Guardians of the Galaxy 2, it was really sad. It saddened me that they took the comic book artwork out of the Marvel Studios logo.
Yeah, they've
It's like, well,
that's another thing. Marvel should be putting a digital code on the tickets to these films. They can afford to do it. If you look at all the Marvel comics at the moment, they're giving away free trades pretty much as free digital codes in the physical copies. Mm. You can't tell me that it's not going to do them good business by putting a Comixology code.
Christ, if you only converted 5% of the 5% of the viewers, that's loads.
As I said before, like, I used to, you know, last year I was working in the Disney store, and it always shocked me. They had this massive section on Marvel. There was never any kind of comic in there. Disney make tons of comics as well. Never any comics in there. There were picture books. There were novels. They had DVDs, CDs, everything, but no comics.
And that's crazy when
you
think of...
shocking.
Yeah, that's crazy, because they do make a lot of all-ages comics now. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff out there, so there's no excuse for it, really.
But it's like, this is why I feel, you know, we can't look to the industry as it stands to take the lead. I mean, like, as I said, Scarlet, Marvel aren't making money on their monthly issues, and they're using the movies to subsidize the comics, and they're using the comics to generate IP to hopefully keep them making movies for the next 10, 20, 30 years. I mean, I know that sounds horribly cynical, but it's like, I love those movies as much as the next person. Yeah. But
as I think Tony mentioned, like, I work in print, and that's essentially this bleeding money all the time. I don't think we ever lose print, but it's definitely kind of not nosediving. But where I work, if we consider we haven't lost any subscribers, we maybe gained a few, that's a positive rather than year-on-year growth. Whereas kind of like the web clients we have, that's just phenomenal, kind of the growth in that. It's definitely kind of like building up the strong web presence alongside print.
So much, yeah, because if you want innovation, you know, it's easy to maybe, I don't know, be snooty about, say, webcomics, and I say that, Dan, with no insult meant, and I'm producing a webcomic, but it's easy to be snooty about them and say, like, oh, you know, they're not real comics or whatever, or, you know, but at the same time, like, who's laughing if they have, you know, thousands of hits a day and a dedicated Patreon, and, you know, and they're earning money from fans who love their work, are engaged with their work, and are contacting them every day, you know.
It brings to mind the Seymour Skinner meme. It's a question. Am I out of touch? And he goes, no, it's the children that are wrong. You kind of got to embrace that new kind of wave of stuff and kind of...
I know, we have to.
...buy it or get crushed by it.
We have to learn and evolve constantly because, you know, it's... at best, it might stagnate, and at worst, you know, it might actually, you know, make things actively worse for people if it doesn't improve.
I mean, taking back to the point where after your article, someone commented that you've kind of highlighted a lot of things, but no solutions. I think the problem is so multifaceted and so big, it's very hard to identify specific issues, and therefore trying to come up with specific solutions is almost impossible, very difficult indeed. I mean, we've all come up with a kind of a dozens of ideas of kind of tackling it, but we can't really put a finger on something and say that is the reason why it's not working. And I'm sure that the big guys are having equally the same problem with kind of sales and people not coming to comics.
Oh, entirely. I just feel, and I feel if there's one thing I'd really like to just kind of drive home, is that I feel there is a big difference between, you know, the indies, and as much as we are all making comics, I feel there is a world of difference between the indies and, you know, the big three. And I feel there's a world of difference between somebody who is able to go to a show because they want to, or because, you know, they are a guest, and between someone who has to physically go to a show, or they're not going to make the money, you know, A, to, you know, maybe in some situations to actually feed themselves, you know, or B, to keep making comics. It's like, I have a day job and I love it, and I can't, I'm very grateful to it because I am under no delusions that while Big Punch looks after itself, I can't live off it.
No, you know, I'll tell you what hasn't been touched on yet, John, as well, is, and I've noticed it certainly over the last maybe 2 years, is the settling into this warm and cozy convention circuit. I think there's people, not you two, well, not anyone in this room actually, but there's people who go to conventions because it's part of what they do, is part of their social circle, and they sit there and they don't engage enough with people. I genuinely think that's the case.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I think you walk past tables, same faces, same comics, no engagement. I get that. I see that all the time at the moment. I think getting people on their feet, getting them chatting, new product on their table, I think does the world a good. And if we don't keep doing that as much as we can, then it will die a death.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I love conventions, they are, you know, and I love the fact that we get to see people, you know, people I love, you know, kind of like my extended comics family. But, you know, when we go to a convention, we're working.
Yeah.
You know, and that's,
you want to spread your word of what you make a comic you love. You want to spread the word about it. You know.
Yeah.
Because you want it read, didn't you? That's the thing. You want your work to be read.
I know, and it's Italian. Like, in every time someone buys a book, you know, we're making a fan. You know, I'm a big believer in just kind of making the best damn book you can, and and just letting it speak for itself. But, you know, we try to be switched on. We try to be kind of friendly and welcoming. I've said this before earlier, but yeah, it's like it is hard work, because it's not that I'm obsessed with money. That's not the point. But it's like if I don't present my book as best I can, I may not get to make another.
But I mean, not in completely general terms, but often I think I hear people complaining about conventions, and I feel like saying to them, well, perhaps you should get up on your feet and speak to people. Don't just sit there looking uncomfortable.
The thing
you
is,
do get that a lot.
This was the like common response when I posted stuff. One of the common responses was, what are you going to do about it, Milmo? And I was like, well, right. I don't know, was number one. Number two was, there are all these things, A, B, and C, that creators should be doing to promote themselves. And I don't really have an issue with that, because I kind of think, well, if you're not doing well and it's because you don't have enough promotion, or you're not standing up and engaging with people, or at the worst, like you're stuff just isn't really up to
sitting there looking grumpy sometimes.
Yeah, you know, sitting there looking grumpy. Yeah. That's one thing. My big problem is when you're doing the best that you possibly can and it's just not happening.
Yeah,
I'm really concerned with. I kind of think the people who are not doing anything to further themselves, I kind of think, well, there's only so much you can do. I don't really concern myself with them, to be honest.
I don't
Which
think anyone should be allowed to look grumpy, and even if they're tired, they shouldn't do it until after 4, because it's around that time where your batteries are running low. But before then, you've got to be switched on. You've got to be smiling and prepared for anything. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to think, kind of not bigging up the show too much, we've kind of helped in kind of pushing kind of awareness of other titles and trying to kind of get a little bit of community. Maybe there were communities, but they kind of brought them together a little bit more, maybe a bit fragmented. But definitely John's idea of kind of taking the initiative in the front foot and come up with things to make stuff better rather than sit around and wait for this kind of death of a thousand cuts as it slowly kind of like bleeds out.
And it's also an added enthusiasm. That's what you're saying there, John, is that's what we need as well.
Yeah.
You know, to do it in an enthusiastic and positive way, I think is what's needed.
Yeah, and maybe this is just my skewed perspective, but I feel, you know, saying that, you know, tolerating bad conditions or, you know, bad sales simply because it's not about the money, I'm like, I don't think that's a valid excuse anymore. I feel you're ultimately only going to hurt yourself, because the industry is not going to look after you.
And also
an
event.
Thing.
Yeah.
An event. You just get so many... Oh, sorry.
No, you go.
Well, you just get so many like creators that are just like, oh, well, I'm doing badly, but that's just the way it is. Yeah. And I think that's what like the heartbreaking thing is. It's just there are so many people, and not just in like indie comics, in art in general. Like I was reading this article called, you know, saying, you know, why are we just not being more angry about this and trying to do anything about it? So many people just say, oh, well, I'm getting paid really badly at this publisher, but that's just the way it is. I'm a creator. That's what I should expect.
That's just heartbreaking. We need to get our house in order. Like, I think this is a big thing as well. It's like, my article may have given the impression that I was, you know, griping particularly at MCM, and while there are undoubtedly convention problems, it's like, we're never going to be in a position to fix them until we fix ourselves, until we change some attitudes. You know, and maybe it's not a case of, I think rules or enforcing stuff is not the way. I just want to like kind of just reach out to people and say, you can have it better. You know, like, and it doesn't take much. And I think a lot of it is just protecting yourself and looking after yourself and being willing to try new things.
And
I think you were right earlier as well in saying that I think we need a couple of people to be almost like trailblazers, because I think we are reaching like a point where, I don't know, we need more people who are going
to reach out,
make a really good run of it and show that there is a way to make a living off it, there is a way to have success, and then I think more people will find legitimacy through that as well.
I think we need to seriously define what success means. Because I think the other thing is, in addition to saying, you know, I'm doing it for the love, it's okay, there's often sometimes, and I've been guilty of this in my past life, of thinking, well, it's okay, because maybe one day I'll be working for the big players. You know, like maybe I'll just promote myself out of this bad situation. But I'm like, I just want to say to people, it's like, what if this is as good as it gets? And why can't it be better?
Yeah, because it's like, because I used to think that as well, that just, you know, this indie comics are just something that I do until I find a publisher. And now I'm just kind of thinking, no, maybe I should just be trying to make this work for me now. Because what is to say that what a publisher offers me is going to be anything better than I can do for myself at this moment in time, especially when you read other people's articles that are saying like, oh, well, you know, I got an offer from a publisher and I just can't survive on it and I'm giving up comics. You kind of think, oh. And then you see some other people who are indies and are on Patreon and are making $3,000 a month.
Yeah.
You kind of think, well, why then? Do you know what I mean? Why can't we just all try and aim for that?
I know, maybe exactly. That's a statistic, I mean,
but, you know.
I mean, I look at an idol of mine is Chris Straub, who's an American webcomic chap, and he does everything from like three-panel, you know, kind of funnies and comedy stuff to an ongoing serial horror comedy, which is absolutely fantastic, called Brood Hollow. And, you know, do you think he cares that he's not published when he's getting several thousand dollars a month from a Patreon from a fan base that he's hand-built, you know?
I knew this was going to be a big conversation, and I think it's definitely one that we'll have to revisit. Get you both back on again in the future. Let's just all keep an eye on the landscape of comics over the
Vince, I've just because clearly you know this is the gift that keeps on giving. I just have one last thing to say, and that is simply that everything we've talked about. It's like maybe a charter. Pindy comics, you know, promotional things, organization. I like two other crazy ideas I would love to see made possible somehow is one, a physical meetup, the con that isn't a con for creators. I'd love an opportunity where everyone could get together and have a drink and chat.
It does happen, John. It does. That does happen, mate.
I'm just antisocial. I don't get the invites.
Yeah, you get. There was an event, Ladies Do Comics, on Monday in London. But
but also it does depend on where you're situated.
It does, I know. But then again, it would anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People would find it difficult to get if it's somewhere you weren't going to sell. Then you know there are little social groups. I meet up most weekends with a couple of three or four guys, all of whom are making comics. You know, and I think they are out there, mate. I think
it's simply I just like to see like the discussion we've been having now. Yeah. You know, wouldn't it be great if we could get 50 people, like, who are exhibitors behind the table? And you're never going to please everyone, but it might be a broader snapshot than what, you know, I can offer simply by voicing my ill-informed opinions.
Am I being an utter Grinch in that a part of me, like, shrinks inside when you say that? Like, getting 50 people all around a table, all trying to
all drinking.
Find
oh,
a way.
God, the
all
chaos.
Drinking, oh. All trying to say exactly what they want to say. Yeah. I don't know, like, oh.
Or maybe it's just... Thinks,
right.
No, and
I
last,
have to do it, but, oh,
the
geez.
Last thing I would expect is... for us to kind of marching out with the hive mind and suddenly being in utter unity and
order.
Speaking in one voice. But I just feel we need an environment other than the web to physically talk, even just for an afternoon. And maybe we just air grievances.
Yes, fair point.
It'd be nice to get people kind of talking. And I guess, because the only other crazy idea I want to say is like in talking about fun things we could do for the comic village that, you know, might be possible. It's like, I would love to see, and this is incredibly indulgent, but I would love to see a new award ceremony purely for the comic village. And I know we do have the British Comic Awards, but, you know, you're also playing against 2000 AD and, you know, any Image title.
Is that still going this year? I'm not sure if it's still going.
I don't know, but I just like, I mean, Sarah, I know we discussed this briefly at MCM, but like, and basically, my logic is, does it sound cool? Yes. Would it make the world worse? Probably no. But I would love to see...
I think that should be like a thought process for most things.
Yeah.
But my idea is, like, what... Because me and Nichols are just kind of like, you know, spitballed this. But what if you had an award ceremony and the only conditions for entering was that you had to have, at some point in the last year, have exhibited at a show? And I know that seems an odd criteria, but it would kind of just indicate that this is for the indie people. And, you know, we have like a panel, you know, it's like we shortlist it, we longlist it, you know, and then every year we do a random draw and five people get selected and they get to vote. And you know what? Even if it's just as simple as you get like a nice little JPEG medal to stick on your badge that says 2017, you know, Heart of Time was the best time travel comic of the year or something like that. And I know that's stupid. And I know that's not going to fix the world. But it's like, why can't we have nice things? And why can't we
an excuse for a piss up.
Exactly. I'm sold on that fact alone.
I mean, they tried it. They tried it a little bit at Leamington, didn't they? You know, small press factor we had this year. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it's when the awesome awards appear that change the world. When we have the Oscars rivaling TV syndicated award show for the small press.
Well, I mean, any
lot sexier.
Yeah. Any award is only has as much weight as the people ascribing to it give
it. Well, the weight is all dependent on what you make it out of.
Exactly. Anyway. Lead. Mostly lead.
There's just going to be lead awards.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Daft idea.
Yeah. No, you're a man of ideas. what do you think, folks? Because obviously there's too much to talk about here. That's why we're going to get them back at some point. But after you've heard this show, there's going to be a little post on the Awesome Comics Talk page. And I know it's going to be a little bit lively. As this topic has suggested, everyone doesn't have a 140 character opinion on it. They have paragraphs. So, you know, our Facebook group discussion is a good place to go. So please join us. I'm looking forward to reading it because there's so much to talk about. I don't think there's a right and I don't think there's a wrong. I think it's a time for discussion. That's what it is. So there you go. God, I sounded like a politician then, didn't I?
You did. I would just like to apologise to everyone for talking quite so much. I'm a monster.
I've never heard so many sorries in one episode between our guests.
Sorry.
Very British.
Very British indeed.
Excuse me.
Yes. So so there we go. The coffee's kicked in.
I'll be very careful, Milmo. That's very like Vince's bedroom voice.
Oh my god.
How do you know it's me, Tony? The light's always off.
It's a bit like your voice you do when everyone calm down, we're about to start.
God, I'm just a target for abuse. But speaking of shouting and hollering, do we have any shout outs, anyone?
I've got a couple. So bear in mind, we're recording early, so I actually haven't been to LCAF yet, but it was really good, and I was glad to meet everyone who was there. Well, nearly everyone. The roundup of that on next week's show. And also, sign up to Cockney Kung Fu, the mailer. Go to tinyletter.com/CockneyKungFu. You'll get an essay off me every week and a load of art, some music recommendations and some sort of movie stuff, Kung Fu movie stuff from me and the marvellous Nick Prolix.
Nice. I've signed up.
You have. And thanks to everyone who has so far. We've had a really good uptake on it. We're really pleased.
Yeah. Nice. I'd say happy birthday for yesterday, Vince.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday for yesterday, Vince.
Oh, Vince.
So when this comes out on Monday, it would have been the day before.
Yeah.
So...
So what do you do? What do the goths
so
do on
confused
their
right now.
Thank you,
what
everyone.
What do you do? Just dance around a black candle or something?
Yeah, I pledge to the Dark Lords that hopefully one day they'll take you away.
Yeah. Play the cure.
Oh, wow. Dear. Thank you, everyone. I just want to shout out a little Kickstarter for Fate Book 1, Land and Sea, by an Irish creator named Anthea West. I've mentioned her before on the show because she did the book Sleep Tight. Do you remember when I talked about
that? Oh, yeah, that was really good. I really liked
that. Yeah, really good. Yeah. And she's got a collection of her webcomic up on Kickstarter at the moment. It's already achieved its goal, but it's well worth checking out. It's going to be a full-colour 126-page graphic novel full of fantasy and lots of crazy things going on. It looks really good, actually. There's plenty of bits of artwork. It's about a dust bunny who's getting caught up in like loads of strange, fantastical adventures. There's all kinds. I mean, obviously, it's a webcomic, so you can probably see it for free. But personally, when it comes to webcomics, I always like it when there's a Kickstarter and you can collect it all. Because I just like filling the shelves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So check it out. It'll be in the show notes, as everything we'll talk about this week will be. But there you go. That's my one. Dan, do you have one?
Oh, we're talking recommendations now. No, I've got
a shout out, Dan.
A shout out. No shouts. All right. Sorry. Apart from the previous mentioned your birthday one.
Thank you. Yeah.
Happy birthday, Vince.
Yeah. Yeah. Rewind a couple of seconds to relive the highlight to that one.
Let's just... Let's move on.
Sorry, did that come across sarcastic?
It's not like you, Dan.
For every time you say, "Let's move on," Let's move on.
That's back to his bedroom voice.
Oh, fucking hell! Right. There's five of us tonight, so there's going to be plenty of recommendations.
Right.
Who wants to go first? Should we have the guests go first?
Yes, good idea.
Yeah.
Let's start. Ladies first. Sarah, what would you like to recommend?
I have a special one just for you, Tony, because I know how much you like Cat Diaries and cat comics. This one is for you. So I don't know, have you heard of Junji Ito? He's like a massive Japanese horror comic maker.
Yes. I thought you were going to say he's a massive cat.
He's a massive Japanese cat. So, he's made stuff like Gyo, Uzumaki, that kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
really,
we talked about him.
Oh, and then also they did, you know, the Enigma of Amagara Faults. That one when it's like, this hole, it was made for me. Like those ones, like really bizarre, crazy comics. So Gyo is basically about like a load of fish that get infected with this weird parasite that means they have metal legs attached to them, and they invade Tokyo. It's insane. So he made a cat diary about, like, true to life, about him and his cats, and it's all done in his horror style, and it is amazing.
But it's not a horror book.
It's not a horror book, but it's him and his wife or his partner, and they pull the same expressions, and it has the same kind of art style that he uses for his horror comics, but it's about cats. Amazing. And it's amazing. And so his cats are called Yon and Moo. And Yon has like a skull pattern in his fur. And he's like the weirdest, scariest looking cat. And it's just, it's not very long. Like, I think you can buy it in one volume at the moment. And it's been out for a while. But it's just, it's hilarious. It's
What's
really,
it
really good. It's called Junji Ito's Cat Diary. Or you can find it under Yon and Moo. So, Yon and Moo.
Cool.
That's
definitely for Tony.
Yeah.
That suits the furry that I'm currently dressed as. It's, I'm as a cat punisher, sexy cat punisher.
I just mean it's a cat book that you probably won't get annoyed at. You might find quite funny.
There's a Venn diagram there.
Yeah. Milmo's clearly just done it to wind me up, but she's trying to be nice about it.
genuinely go read it, or if failing that, just read some Junji Ito, because
I mean, I got the Gyo first volume recently that had that fault story in the back, and it's such
that gave you nightmares, didn't it?
That is pretty twisted, but beautiful stuff.
I love the way he deals with this element of madness, that just there's horrific things that happen and people are just like inexplicably drawn to them. And I just find that a really good,
because his latest book, which came out, is all about a bunch of melting school children or something like that. I've forgotten what it is. It's really, really messed up.
Oh, not another one of those.
Yeah. That old genre. That tired genre. What about you, John? What would you like to recommend?
I'm going to recommend it because I know the third series is just beginning, but I've recently reread Injection Volumes 1 and 2 by Warren Ellis, Declan Shavey? Am I saying his surname right?
Yeah. Shelby.
And Jordy Belair. And it's one of those rare comics where I picked up and I was like, wow, I need to up my game. Like, I think Warren Ellis is of course a monolith of a writer. But at the same time, he's operating at the top of his game, and I feel doing stuff with the format, I don't think they could use Injection if you were teaching comic book writing in 10, 20 years' time. Like, it is some of the tightest, most efficient storytelling I think I've experienced. It's stunning, and I love it. I love every minute, and the artwork is
It's got some of the best covers. Some of the best design covers.
They are astounding, and the story is really, it's really just weird and engaging, and everything that comics should be. And it's kind of one of his books that, you know, it makes you curse because it's so good and you think, I will never be this good. And then it makes you happy that it simply exists. And I'm like, I am more than happy to be illuminated by the light of this book, because it may shine brighter than me, but it is beautiful. So I just cannot recommend it enough.
Blimey. I've always wondered about that series. I need to get into it at some point.
I feel I've oversold it now. Oh, and I'd also recommend everybody checking out an album, the debut album by a band called Man and the Echo, because I discovered them by chance yesterday, and I've already listened to their album 4 times, and it's kind of Northern Soul meets Pulp meets Richard Hawley meets the Manics, and it is just cuttingly amazing lyrics. It's great. Check it out.
I'm going to listen to it and judge you probably, John.
So that and I look forward to you agreeing that my opinions are right.
As Dan rushed in straight from work, didn't you, Dan? God bless you.
Yes.
You're desperate. Yep. You don't have a recommendation this week, so it's quite good. We've got 2 guests. So,
yeah,
more than enough. So, Tony, do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
Shall I go?
Go on.
I've done, as I've been going fucking mental about it all day, I've been reading for the last couple of days, Carthago, which is a book out of Humanoids. Have any of you guys seen it?
No.
Seen what you've posted.
It was a book that was on my wish list, and I thought, should I? Well, I'm not quite sure what it's actually like inside, but you've completely sold me already, but carry on.
Good fucking God, it is good. It is incredible. It's written by Christoph Beck, art by Eric Henino, and colours by Milan Jonovic. And I'll tell you what, this is a French book by Humanoids, translated by Humanoids UK. If this was a Image book, people would be fucking losing their minds on it. Genuinely, it is. This is the sort of thing that would make artists give up and go and work in 88 Smiths. You know, it's just so good. It opens in a sort of in a sea scene, 23 million years BC, of some humpback whale type whales diving into the sort of deep blue ocean, and then you see the fin and the teeth of a huge shark creature. It skips forward to the Stone Age and of a caveman running away across a vast, absolutely incredible snowy landscape being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. He sort of barely survives, but as he comes to and pulls himself out from underneath the sort of dead body of the tiger, he realizes he's in a sort of graveyard of bones. Just honestly, some of the best things I've ever seen. It skips forward, and it does skip forward and backwards in a bit, but they discover that there's this a hidden area underwater that has prehistoric life in it, prehistoric fish, underwater dinosaurs, and also a megalodon, one of these huge, you know, sharks that makes a great white look small. You know, there's a couple in it. It becomes a conspiracy, environmental science adventure series, something that, you know, Western, you know, not Western, but English and American comics rarely sort of try and do. And this is just the most incredible art you've ever seen. Eric Hanano is a fucking revelation. He handles everything so well, from human expressions down to animals, down to technology, down to, you know, underwater robots. There's currently 5 volumes in the series. I bought mine from Comixology. I think it's $3.99 for a sort of 50-page book. It's just got me excited about this. You know, recently, the three of us have been dipping in and out of Eurocomics, and there's so much there. There's so much that's going to blow your mind, and we're delving into that area without giving too much away quite soon, aren't we, Vince?
Yeah,
we've got a few little surprises up our sleeves around that. It's a comic that I will describe as written for adults. It's written, there's a lot of writing on certain, some of the pages have nothing, and they're just these sort of beautiful, sort of shocking moments of violence. And
very cinematic as well, isn't it?
Yeah, just incredible stuff, yeah. But there's pages full of dialogue, you know, and it's science, and it's environment, and it's politics, and it's character and personality. And the first book ends up on the most fucking amazing visual that I can't possibly spoil. But even if you have a look at the covers, just breathtakingly good. The amount of people who've seen it and gone, yeah, right, this is a no-brainer. I'm buying this straight away. Just incredible stuff. So go to Humanoids. I bought mine on Comixology. Humanoids UK do print versions of it. There's a Carthago Adventures, I think, which is a sort of sequel series. 5 volumes in the original one. And then there's, I think, Humanoids putting out a £25.99 of the sequel series, which I don't know the quality of because I haven't seen that one yet. But the original series is just incredible. So go and do that one. Very good.
That's awesome. Blimey. I don't know how I'm going to follow that up. But I'll try to do it. And what better way to do it than with a Garth Ennis book? My pick this week is one that totally came out of the blue from New Comic Book Day, which was yesterday as we were recording. It's from Aftershock Comics, the second week in a row I've mentioned one of their titles, and it's called Jimmy's Bastards. immediately you know it's a Garth Ennis book, don't you? Yeah, written by Garth Ennis, art by Russ Braun, colours by John Kalitz, and letters by Rob Steen. I believe Russ Braun worked with Garth on The Boys.
Yes, he did. I love his work. Yeah. I picked up a sketchbook from him at New York last year. Gorgeous stuff.
His work on The Boys was great, but this is next level stuff. Have you seen any of this, Tony? Yeah, this one?
I've seen it only online. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, this is amazing. It's really amazing.
He's worth following on Facebook, actually, the artist.
Oh, really? Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the co-creator with this, with Garth Ennis as well, on this story. And basically, this is the setup. Jimmy Regent, Britain's number one super spy, has got it all. Intrigue, adventure, a license to shoot whoever he likes, and beautiful women falling at his feet. He also has a new partner who isn't quite as impressed by Jimmy as all the other women appear to be. Now, there's a price to pay for Jimmy's multiple romantic conquests, the results of which are about to come calling in the worst possible way. I think we know where this is going. It's basically a satire about a James Bond character whose bastard children have all grown up and decide to kill him.
Okay.
Because he's such a wanker. It's an action-packed story that it's definitely for mature audiences. I mean, anyway, if you like things like The Boys or Preacher or stuff, this is right up your street. There's cursing, copious amounts of cursing, ludicrous amounts of cursing, and I have to admit, it had me giggling like a child throughout. Because, I don't know, Ennis has a sublime, over-the-top sort of dialogue. He has a way of doing it that just gets me every time. And there's set pieces that ride the edge of good taste in the best kind of way. You know,
I think he goes so far past good taste he can't look back and see it sometimes.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love that about him. I think he's one of the. I don't think we treasure him enough as a great British writer.
I think
when he pushes it into absurdity, and then it kind of gets very real.
Yeah,
and the kind of the harsh contrast really kind of
there's a satire to it.
And also, I think he's a writer that has some of the most emotional moments. I mean, people talk about the shocking stuff, and you know the over the top, you know, the stuff that crosses the line. But he's been responsible for some of the most dramatic and emotional lines that I've read in comics.
Oh God, think of his Hellblazer stuff. You know, just beautiful stuff. I mean, the Preacher stuff. You know,
the end of The Boys was just a punch in the gut. Just absolutely. But this is just, if you imagine someone like him, he takes the seatbelt off and just puts his foot to the floor. Do you know what I mean? It's like, right, I'm gonna satirize James Bond. Imagine that, Garth Ennis and Russ Braun doing James Bond, but cranked up to 10. I mean, forget your Secret Service or your Kingsman or whatever. This is the sort of book that has just hooked me. There's some ludicrous moments, but it's got some strong characters as well. Like it said in the synopsis, he gets a new partner called Nancy McEwen, and she turns up, and normally he ends up romanticising all of his partners, but you can tell immediately that she just doesn't give a shit about him. She thinks he's a dickhead, so that's gonna play out brilliantly. I just can't recommend it enough. It plays out nice. The rhythm of the first issue is quite important, I think, to set up the story. And it gives you a big money shot sort of action scene at the beginning, which has a monkey with a human brain spouting obscenities.
isn't it?
Yeah, essentially, it is you. Yeah, it is you. Some marvellous dialogue. And it's got a big dramatic reveal of all of his kids at the end. And a comic that ends with the line, "That's the fucking spirit." Cheers. you know, that sums it up. That's just such a good way to end the comic. You have to see it for yourself. It's available on Comixology and no doubt a fair few comic shops out there. I mean, I don't know how much the Aftershock issues are.
It had a little bit of a push for a while, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, they contacted us. Do you remember ages ago? From a sort of, they sent us that publicity thing. Do you remember ages ago? And I followed it up, but then we never heard back from them.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think they're starting to take off again now. I think they're getting a second wind. Like I say, it's the second week in a row that they've given me a series I'm going to be picking up on a monthly basis. This and Baby Teeth are two of the highlights of my sort of new comic book day at the moment. Really good books. Definitely a publisher to try out if you see them on the shelves, I think. For something a bit different, sort of less glossy than the Image books. Do you know what I mean? It's less...
Yeah.
You know, they're trying something a bit darker, a bit edgier, which I love. So Jimmy's Bastards. Look, it's not highbrow, but I love it. It was ace. I wish I could talk more about it, but most of it is so offensive that I probably wouldn't be able to say it on the show. So there you go. What a grand selection of books.
Yeah.
Not bad, eh?
Yeah.
Not bad. It's amazing what happens when people come together, and that's what this whole show's been about.
Oh, it's about family, really.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Cool. Yeah. Get
away from me.
this is when I should play the Golden Girls theme, isn't it, really?
You find a Golden Girl sexy. You've got to admit it.
Every single one of them, Tony. All the time.
I'd just like to say, I think that picture you put up on Twitter to advertise this show, to say, hey, we're recording, of just that, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like that family. I think that pretty much sums this up.
Tell you now. You sound Danny DeVito.
You
clearly.
Are, Tony. You are a cheeky little DeVito, aren't you? Ooh, look at him over there.
I've never seen that picture. Is it good?
You'll like it. Very good. Very good. It's awesome.
Matt Harrow likes it. He says they do crack in one episode. He says that's funny.
Splendid. Well, in the first episode, one of them is trying to pick up women at an abortion clinic, so... there you go.
They nicked that from Jay and Silent Bob.
But they do it better. Whoa, what did I say? What did I say? Did I shock you? Yeah. I'm sure I did. There's several different ways you can let us know that I shocked you. I'm a pro. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got an independent character that you want to add to our jam piece, email it as a high res .png, which is a term that Tony doesn't know what it means.
I haven't got a fucking clue what that means. Yeah.
But email your character to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. I had a little bit of a faff with that piece of artwork, which I won't go into details, but I'll be showing some more work in progress soon. It's looking amazing. Follow us on Twitter at @theawesomepod, where we'll be talking about the upcoming shows. Probably get some more polls on the go. You know, who knows what's going to happen?
Got some great guests coming up.
We've got some crackers, haven't we?
John and Sarah, you've been lovely as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Fantastic. It's been an absolutely standout show. Two great, great guests. Oh, it's good to hear such kind of passionate opinions. And to you, John and Sarah.
There you go.
I feel like I have to ruin it now.
Sorry, I got egged on by Tony's naughty behaviour.
You have a heart.
My role, love.
You have a conscience.
Yeah. Oh dear. Like us.
Brains, Dan's the heart, and I'm. What am I? Oh yeah, never mind.
What do you mean, Dan's the heart?
You're the brains. So I gave you the brains.
Oh right.
I gave myself the ball bag, so you can't be angry about.
And the bumhole. Right. What a crazy Frankenstein we are. Yes, like us on. I'm trying to do the links. Oh dear.
It's you're the substitute teacher trying to like pull everyone together, and this is two kids just being like,
I try.
We're recording sensible faces.
I'm a babysitter / parole officer. That's why.
Tony's the 64-year-old bad boy leaning back at the
edge of the class. Oh, fucking 64, am I, Locke?
Cigarette. Your words, Eggman. Your words.
Oh, Do you know what? Like us on Facebook if you want. I don't know. I've given up. Facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and join the group Awesome Comics Talk. It's the group that everyone's talking about because it's in the name. Yeah, it's a great place where creators and fans of comics go to just actually discuss. There's no hard sell. There's no nothing. There's just good old fashioned comic talk.
Say what you like.
And that's why the people that take part. Actually, you've taken part quite a bit, haven't you, Sarah?
Yeah. I find it quite a nice place to hang out and ask questions about stuff.
Didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, I've asked about like lettering and Kickstarter and stuff because it's a good place to be.
It's a very welcoming place. There are scented candles. It's wonderful. There's a giant bean bag with Tony's face on it.
To be fair, we've got the mod powers, but not really had to use them apart from kind of stopping a few posts.
Yeah. But generally, we get a lot of strange spam people trying to join the page, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird ones they are.
So I think they try and get legitimacy by joining all these groups and then do some other weird shit on Facebook.
Ooh. Yeah. We should give it a go, just a little social experiment one day.
God, let me know. Legitimacy.
Draw out of random groups.
we'll never be legitimate. But the place that is the website awesomecomics.podbean.com.
I am
ice skating uphill with you bastards tonight. I'm trying. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. We love a review. We're suckers for just being told that we're nice.
We're very needy.
Yeah, we are really, really needy. And we're the only podcast that will openly admit that. I'll be your best friend. Yeah. We will be your best friend. There you go.
We'll pretend to be. Yeah.
You can have our last Rolo. Ooh. Mm. That's not an Urban Dictionary thing, is it, Dan?
I don't know, actually. Have to look
that
one up.
Next week. Yeah, see you next week.
Oh, God.
Was there an outcry wanting to return back to the Urban Dictionary?
Why? It took me a long time to get over. Anyway.
Well, Auntie Tony we haven't done yet as well.
Yes, I know. God, there's so much more to come, see? That's why you need to leave us a good review. Thank you for listening to it on Stitcher or the Podnose Network. Thank you very much. And where can people find us? Online, etc. Let's close this pony down!
Oh, it's me.
Yeah.
The Ezohyz, or downthetubes.net. There you go.
Dan?
I'm on Twitter at Vanguard. I'm fucking forgetting. Twitter at Vanguard Comic. And you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
God bless you, Dan. Thank you for being here.
Make my face go red.
You can find me online at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at The Red Mouse from Mars.com. I almost forgot that myself. And thank you very much once again to our two guests. You've been wonderful.
Thank you.
That's all right. John, be quiet. Yeah, Sarah. where can people find you online? Sarah first.
Oh, okay. You can find me on Twitter at @heart_of_time, or you can just search for Sarah Millman. I've got a picture of myself as a Daegu as my my profile pic. Or I'm also on Patreon as well, and that's literally patreon.com/Milmo, 1L.
Oh, yeah. I love the fact it's Milmo. We're very proud of ourselves.
No, you started that. I've run with it. Like, unashamedly ran with that.
You have to own it. Yeah,
one of the nicest nicknames I've ever got.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Vince quoted that as his favourite achievement of the podcast, didn't you?
Yes.
Do you literally sign stuff, Milmo, now?
Amazing.
There you go. This happens. I hope you're happy.
Amazing. I tell you what, if we achieve nothing else, lads, we've done that, haven't we? We've basically ruined someone's life.
You don't have a name anymore. It's Milmo now. That's basically what's happened.
If anyone says to me, "Do you know Sarah Millman?" I refuse to say I know you until they say Milmo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know.
Because in high school, I was like Milminator and crap like that. That was rubbish. So Milmo was good.
Now you sound like an animated character on children's television.
Yeah, it was rubbish.
They called you crap like that.
Yeah.
Crying out loud.
It's rough.
I know. It was harsh. It's hard times.
Oh dear, John.
Anyway,
you can find me at John Locke Comics on Twitter, and yeah, Afterlife Inc. is available at afterlife-inc.com, or just Google Afterlife Inc. We're everything apart from the Harry Potter fanfic. Big Punch Studios is www.bigpunchstudios.com, and that is a hub for everything we do.
Nice one.
We like a hub on this show.
Yeah.
Big hub.
Big hub. Ooh, lovely.
Big hub magazine.
I stay away from my subscriptions.
Sorry.
Oh my god. Lads, the guests are fighting amongst themselves. We have to close this down. We have to go now. Thank you for listening, everyone. And from here we go. Are you ready? Let's limber up.
Yep.
And do from it. Dan, Tony, John, Sarah, and myself. Hey, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Bye. I've kicked Nick out of studio, so you might hear him come back in at some point, but...
Oh, really?
Aside from that...
What the fuck was that? Did someone knock over shot glasses just then?
Oh, no.
Does it sound a bit like that? Yeah, yeah. we're not near the break in a bottle yet, phase, are we? It's not like...
Is Dan being played by a coaster tonight?
I'm not starting off very well, Mike. This is probably the most embarrassing thing I've ever knocked over, right? I drink a lot of tea in here, and I have my own little tea bag thing that when it, you know, the tea strainer, I knock that over. Oh my god, I should just go home. What am I doing?
Is she drunk? Is this an intervention?
Yeah.
I knocked over a WH Smith once. It's going to happen.